So the talk is called Only Ever Here and Now. And it's really about this fundamental orientation we have away from here and now. And that's where we take refuge in our relentless thinking mind, which is the mind that relentlessly creates past and future. It's the mind that relentlessly creates a me over here and the world out there, creates a separateness that is simply an illusion. It's a creation of mind. When we drop the creation, we aren't separate, and we're very happy. We have this longing for belonging, and we want to belong, not just to, you know, a sense of a good relationship or good family, you know, a good neighborhood, a good community. That's not good enough in terms of what we really want. We want to belong much more widely and deeply than that. We want to just belong, period, to creation. And when we drop out of our relentless thinking mind, that belonging is just here. It's in our cells. It's in our body. It's in our spirit. But we're kind of turbo distracting ourselves away out of this natural presence, this natural being. And I talked about that in our last class, the doing mode and being mode. And we're so used to doing, and not just with our actions, but in our minds, relentlessly doing, trying to change our experience rather than just being with our experience. The being with is nourishing and satisfying and restful. The doing can be exciting. It can be passionate. It can be great. And it has this shadow side of being very stressful. And we get into a lot of trouble with our relentless thinking. So I really want to talk about how we can orient more to the truth of things. And the truth of things is that we are only ever here and now. Our life only ever happens here and now. The only time we ever have is right now. The rest is fantasy or ghosts. Ghosts of the past, fantasies about the future. This moment is it. So I really want to talk about how to orient ourselves more to what's actually our life is. And so let's also really recognize the wonder of our thinking mind. It's amazing, isn't it, that we can think, that we can imagine something, you know? We all got here at 6:30 through thinking. You didn't just be your way here. Your thinking mind got you here. You read an email or you heard about this meeting or something and, you know, figured out where it was and you came here. Thinking mind creates, you know, great beauty, great creativity. So we're not trying to get rid of thinking mind. Thinking mind can be incredibly useful or very harmful. So it's not to get rid of thinking mind, it's to wake up to thinking mind and honor it as this, you know, evolutionary gift that's miraculous. We can imagine the future and it can sort of correspond and we can sort of, you know, navigate and do good things for ourselves, for others. So we wouldn't want to throw this out, but we want to recognize, how's it working for us to be caught so much in our relentless thinking about things? When it works for you, no problem. It's no problem. And the practice of mindfulness and meditation is to stop being the slave of our thinking mind and start using it rather than having it use us, so to speak. So what's really interesting is that our thinking mind, anytime we're thinking about concrete things, if I say car, right? Notice what happens in your mind. What image pops into your mind when you hear the word car? I don't think just general. I mean, is there just the word car popping in your mind, or is there a specific car that comes up? Specific?
Sure, very. The one I bought today.
Oh, great. Wow. Well, that's really up for you today. Very vivid, right? Yeah, so what's the sense that you're using? When I say the word car, what pops up into your mind? What sense is that? Is it smell? Is it taste? Is it touch? Is it sight? Is it sound?
It's definitely sight.
Sight.
Visualization.
Right. So with the thinking mind, we visualize one of our senses. So notice what happens in your mind. I'll say the word apple. What happens in your mind? What came into your mind? Anybody? A green apple. So what sense are you using?
Visual.
Right, sight. And what?
I made a Waldorf salad today.
Waldorf salad. So what sense are you using when you taste? Right. So it's very clear when we're thinking about concrete things, we're just simply recreating a sense experience, right? Waldorf salad is taste, apple is green, car is whatever, you know, this right? We're recreating a visual sense. So now let's try something different. Notice what pops into your mind when I say this word, justice. Anybody? What popped into your mind?
Martin Luther King.
And what sense are you using? Is it abstract? Is it an image? Is it a sound?
It was sort of both. It was like a, I had a flash of an image
okay.
of him sort of on the mall, and then I had, I think, a felt sense of like his energy.
Okay. So tactile a little bit?
Maybe.
Maybe. But also an image of him at the Washington Mall? Yeah, I have a dream, right? So freedom has no physical correlate in the world, right? It's an abstract thought. Justice. How about freedom? I'll say the word freedom. What pops into your mind? Freedom. What came up?
Jail,
okay. The opposite of freedom, or maybe the open jail door. Right, what sense are you using? Sight, sound,
tactile,
and visual, right. Okay, so freedom, justice are abstract concepts. There's no physical correlate. It's abstract. So it makes sense, of course, we would represent concrete concepts with senses, but we tend to represent even the abstract concepts with senses, with our five physical senses. So our thinking mind is thinking about our sensory experience, generally. So in Buddhism, the Buddha talked about six senses. There's our five physical senses, and then there's the sixth sense of the mind, not just ESP, right, which people think about as a sixth sense. Sixth sense is everything. It's thoughts, it's memories, it's emotions, it's consciousness, everything that's mental. The sixth sense is generally in the mode of recreating the other five. Even with abstract ideas, we're recreating a sensory experience. So our thinking about is thinking about the five physical senses. So really, from this perspective, like, our real life is our life through our physical senses. And then our imagined life is the sixth sense. We're just making it all up by recreating physical experiences, or experiences of our five senses. So isn't it odd that our allegiance is like 99.8% to the fantasy? Our allegiance is to the sixth sense, is to our thoughts about everything. We don't spend a lot of time in what we're actually thinking about, which is the five senses. We're not spending a lot of time just resting in our sensory experience. We're just thinking, 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 planning, fantasizing. It's a big fantasy factory, and our allegiance is about 99.8% to the fantasy and about 0.2% to our actual lives. So, that's sort of weird, isn't it? Does that sound like that's a good way to be? That we're giving all of our energy towards just the stuff we're making up? And again, not to throw out the really cool stuff, like creativity is fantastic, beautiful. We don't want to throw that out. But a lot of our time and energy is spent just making stuff up. And that's where our allegiance tends to be. And that would all be fine if it weren't so problematic. All of our difficulty is because of our thinking mind. Now that's a very black and white, simplistic statement, but there it is. First of all, we can all recognize, right, that past, there's no such thing as past and future, except as an idea. Where is tomorrow as a real thing? Tomorrow is only here as an idea, right? Would we all agree with that? Where's yesterday? It's as gone as the dinosaurs, right? I mean, it's just gone. There is no yesterday except as an idea in our heads. So, does anyone not agree with me? I think it's great to not agree with me because then we can discuss. But I will interpret your silence as agreement, so you got to speak up if you don't agree. Looks like we all agree, or we're just shy. So past and future. All of our stress comes because of past and future. Even when something's happening right now, but we're really stressed out because there's a dangerous something unfolding, we're really imagining the future, even if it's just, you know, a few moments from now. All of our stress comes from past and future. So, again, we want to use thinking mind as opposed to be used by it, to be just completely at the mercy of our thoughts. To meditate is to wake up and realize, oh, my thoughts are not reality. They are just ideas about reality. And we can sit here and be aware of our thoughts, and then we can notice when they're helpful to us, when they're useful, and when they're not. And we can let go of the ones that aren't. We can just let go. It's radical to just let go of some pattern, some way of being hard on yourself, beating yourself up. And you can just be like, just a brain fart. It's just a silly thought. And the moment you say that, that thought is just like a bubble that wants you to believe it's real and true, but it's just like a little pinprick. Thought's gone. The only power that judging thought has is the power you give it by believing it to be real. It's not. It's just an idea. So, our life really improves when we actually, through meditation, gain this perspective that thinking mind is just something our brain is doing. The heart pumps blood, the brain pumps thoughts. That's the brain's job. It's not bad brain. Bad brain, shut up brain. You know, we don't want to have that relationship with our brain. We want to be like, good brain. That's so cool. You can think these thoughts. How amazing. wow, look at you go. Oh, that's not that one. That's kind of, that's, whoa, let's not go there, you know. There's a writer, Annie Lamott, she says, my mind is like a bad neighborhood. I wouldn't want to go there alone. You know, we all know those little dark corners. It's like, we don't have to go there. When we're actually, like, mindful, we're just like, oh, no. That one's not the best time for that one, right? So what we want to do is we want to break our enchantment and our allegiance to our relentless thinking. Not to get rid of thinking, but to actually wake up to it so that it stops ruling us. And then we get lighter and happier and, you know, more authentic, actually. So, the Buddha Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, just have this very simple idea that we, if we want to see how we're suffering and understand our suffering, we just simply need to watch our mind. If we want to see what makes us happy, we want to simply watch our experience and start to see clearly. And our practice is one of seeing clearly. Vipassana means clear seeing. And to see clearly, we have to wake up to the present moment. Because we've all agreed that past and future are ghosts and fantasies. It doesn't exist. So our mindfulness practice is a present moment awareness. And so our refuge is reality. And Buddhism uses the concept refuge a lot. Refuge is really where we put our energy. We can have refuges that are, you know, not helpful, not safe. And we can have refuges that are like a safe harbor. And Buddhism advises choose reality as your refuge. Not all of our relentless thinking. So refuge is this idea, and it's really about, there's a pretty famous commencement speech by the writer David Foster Wallace, where he's at Kenyon College a few years back, and he just basically says to everybody, well, you might not think you're religious, but you are. Because you're going to, in your life, worship something. It might not be Christianity or Jesus or God. It might be something else, like power, like money, like success. But we all worship. And worship is where we relentlessly place our energy. And we could consider that like our refuge, you know. Our refuge is where our mind is just most habitually placing itself. And Buddhism advises to notice how you're kind of taking refuge. It might be, you know, in endless pleasure seeking, which is great, right? Pleasure's great. when it works, but it doesn't last. It's contagious, it's sort of going around. Right? So we want to take refuge in a safe harbor, a harbor that actually really works for us. And so Buddhism says, why not let that safe harbor be reality, be your actual present moment experience, because that is your life. Your life is always this moment. You can imagine 10 minutes from now, but that's not now. Our refuge is now. And Trungpa Rinpoche, the Tibetan teacher who's, you know, was a big presence in Boulder in the 80s, he talks about, we imagine ourselves in this kind of big deal life, in our big deal future, our big deal past, and it's all a big deal. But really, truthfully, all we've got are these little dots of nowness. This is our life. Right now, This is our life. If you would, check in. Notice what's obvious to you right now in your body. Feel your body. That's a little dot of nowness. Now, notice what thought is in your head. Just notice. All you're doing is noticing. That's another little dot of nowness. This is our refuge because this is our life. If you're going to worship, build that worship on something that's really real and truthful, which is this moment. And now this moment, and now this moment, and now this moment. It flows and flows and flows. But we're only ever here and now. This is our life. So we need this refuge, this sense of reorienting our allegiance to this moment. And if we go back to the six senses, if we're in any one of our five physical senses, we're in the present moment. If you're noticing a sensation, you're in the now. If you're noticing a sound, a sight, a taste, a touch, you're in the now. So one teacher, Jon Kabat-Zinn, he has a book called Come to Your Senses, you know. And, he's meaning get into your five physical senses and you will come to your mental sense. You will come to your senses. We need to be much more in our bodies, in our hearing, sight, sound, taste, touch, and life becomes simpler and clearer and happier. So this is all easy to say. Much harder to do. So I want to kind of stop with this, and I'll take up with, all the benefits of being in the now, really shifting our allegiance to what's actually happening in the now. And there's a lot of power in that. So I'll continue that after a break. But let me just stop here, invite your input, questions, comments, responses.
Sometimes the memory of a sense almost seems as real as the presence of sensing something.
Uh-huh.
It's a little confusing.
Uh-huh. So just for the mic, sometimes the memory of a sense can be almost more real than the actual experience was.
Yeah.
And that's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
Is there anything specifically you're thinking about?
You said the apple thing?
Yeah.
I was smelling
yes.
an apple.
Yeah.
And that is what made me think of this.
Uh-huh. So that was very vivid, just kind of the smell of the apple.
Yeah.
You know, and it may be that sometimes our memory of something is powerful, right? Our memories are not objective. Our memories always happen in association with something, right? This one little simple tiny example, but, I'm sitting there doing carpentry. I'm kind of watching my experience, and my mind said, oh, where's my hammer? Like, my mind didn't just go to start thinking about the smell of apples or the taste of pizza. My mind somehow, don't ask me how, just remembered, like, oh, right, I left my hammer in the outbuilding. That was the next association. My memory was very much being conditioned by my present experience. So we don't think of the past in any objective way. Our memories of the past are very much conditioned by our present experience. Right? So, for some reason for you right now, a memory of an apple is very evocative. Yeah. But really, that's more about maybe your present moment experience.
Could a kind of recurring, painful muscles be body attempting to express something that needs to be kind of looked at?
Sure, and again, for the mic, is some chronic recurring physical condition you know, possibly reflecting something that needs to be looked at about our emotional or mental lives. Yeah, definitely.
Or is it just pain?
You don't always know, right? I mean, people have experiences through meditation of having emotional experiences and through that releasing pain in their body. And sometimes not. Sometimes there's just pain. That's purely structural, physical, that's not psychosomatic. So we don't often know. But, you know, but meditation, I mean, there are some schools of meditation where you focus strictly on sensation. You don't go into the content at all. And stuff gets worked through just through sensation. So it's just hard to say exactly. It depends on the context. So would you agree all this is sort of simple, right? Oh, right, yeah, our life is now, that's all it is. Easy to say, simple, and hard to do, right? Do we agree? Yeah, that's the rub. So we, not to mention that this practice of present moment awareness, it feels good in the moment, but, you know, this is, whenever someone says not to mention, it means you're going to mention it, so... to mention, you know, this just happens to be the Buddhist path of awakening, of enlightenment. This just happens to be the simple teaching that leads to, you know, being Buddha, right? Being an awakened person. So this is, it's simple, but it's incredibly profound. It has incredible payoff. So that's what the next part of the talk will be. Just one last invite. Anyone else want to say something before we take a break? Please.
You know, I guess part of me is just like, oh, amen. It's such a relief to be in the now. And it's been so interesting coming off of like a long retreat and watching the mental activity like ramp up again,
yeah.
Come back,
totally,
and to appreciate like how exhausting like
yes.
that is, and how restful it actually is to be in the
yes.
five senses versus
yes.
in this one.
Yes,
because I think in my normal daily life, when I don't step out of that and really
yes.
experience it, it's I'm
yes.
just caught up in that momentum.
Right,
and. Yeah, it's just an interesting vantage point.
So the comment, I'll just
yeah.
simplify, but it's very restful. After coming off a long retreat, it's restful to be in the five senses. But when we're just really in that kind of habit of being very engaged with our mind, we don't quite realize that there's this restfulness available. Is that fair to say? Exactly. So why is it so hard? If it's, we all know these experiences, right? Some moment where you've had some flow, a flow experience, or through lovemaking, or art, or music, or something where you just do check out of your relentless thinking. And we know how restful this is, right? We've all had these experiences, even if it's just, you know, brief moments of them. So why is it so hard to just rest in our five physical senses? Why is it so hard?
Because it's not what we do naturally, and it takes a lot of practice.
So we do naturally and takes a lot of practice, meaning we're practiced in the other thing. We've practiced a ton of being, right? So we have to develop a new habit, right? We're in the habit of not being, so that's a big part of it. The word meditation in Tibetan is gom, And gom means to make yourself familiar with. So meditation is the practice of making ourselves familiar with nowness. Because we're in this habit of just being so... Part of it is the ego in us, ego mind, just thinks it's boring, right? We're so used to stimulation, and it's just only getting turbocharged now with all our computing and our devices. We are always being stimulated. We are, and I think this is safe to say, the most distracted culture in the history of the planet. We've never been this distracted. Never. So it's hard. No matter when people have lived, we've practiced this relentless thinking. But now it's even more. Very little downtime. Right? You fill up your gas, and there's gas TV now. There's radio blaring, like in the overhead, right? And then there's a gas TV. Have you seen that? God forbid, for that 1 minute it takes to pump your gas, you don't have something to distract you.
Intelligence with the scrolling down.
Yeah. It's the crawl, right?
Yeah.
What used to be, wasn't the crawl just on the bottom? But now there's on the left is like the six stories that are going to come up. This is on ESPN, right? They have the six stories, and they highlight the one they're on. They have the five that are coming, and then there's the scrawl on the bottom. And then there's something else on the right, usually, I think. So that little, even the TV is in the screen is becoming smaller and smaller. What is that doing to us? We're practicing a ton of distraction, a ton of being stimulated, and we forget that actually sometimes we need to stop and just be resting in our senses. So, okay, we'll take a break. So we're talking about this, even though it can be very restful to be in the five senses, our habits often prevent us. It's hard. It's a real adjustment to have to make. And I just did a wilderness retreat with a good friend, and we camped out. We backpacked sort of separately together, but in Canyonlands National Park, and then had some base camp nights together. And, you know, I could just watch my mind. It's like, huh, canyons, huh? Wow. People drive all over the world for this, huh? And I had met people from Spain, you know, in the early part of the trip. Huh. Wow. It's kind of boring. Oh, be here now, huh? Jeez. Give me a break, right? Like, really boring. You know, we want the pleasant experiences, but we'll take Tabasco sauce, you know, something basically really unpleasant, over just bland old mashed potatoes or brown rice, like, whatever. You know, at least Tabasco is like, oh, intense, like, huh. But, you know, canyon wall... And like in Canyonlands, the sky is blue. Literally for 6 days, we didn't see a cloud until like the last day. Blue sky, featureless, empty space. I mean, our ego mind, right? We can't stand that. We would take Tabasco like a burning tongue any day over just bland blue sky. Cliffs, yeah, I mean, they're kind of magnificent, like the way they're just standing there, imperturbable, but come on, give me some Tabasco. So, So there's definitely this, you know, and I think it's kind of sad, you know, that youth now, that there's a drop-off since the 80s of something like 60%, and I don't know how this is measured exactly, of youth participation in the outdoors. And, you know, my dear beloved nieces and nephews, some of them really like to hike. Some of them can't stand it. It's that. It's just like, hike? What are we going to do? Well, we're going to hike. Yeah, but what are we going to do when we hike? Well, we're just going to hike. Nah. I don't like hiking. You know? So this is, you know? So no matter who we are, there's an adjustment. And, you know, we like the drama, even though it's difficult. Like, you know, neutral experiences on the Dharma path are extremely helpful. They help the mind get very present. There's a whole practice in Tibetan Buddhism of sky gazing where you gaze at big, open, empty sky. And it's a way of your mind, and it's totally neutral. It's a way of your mind to get really spacious and quiet and happy. Neutral on the spiritual path is a very helpful thing. But it's so hard. We're so conditioned for spice. Something. And like the ego mind loves a problem. We definitely don't want a problem, but we will definitely take a problem over bland, blue, featureless, big open sky. Right? Is there a thought bubbling?
Right,
yeah.
Go.
Yeah. I just
always thoughts bubbling.
Always thoughts bubbling.
there kind of was, but it wasn't.
I'm putting you on the spot, but
yeah.
I can just.
I was thinking of like how. That's very true, and so much of that is environmental and the people around you also that
exactly.
throw you in between those spaces. And,
totally.
Short of isolating yourself, there's a practice of encountering that constantly.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Not always, I mean, usually not by choice.
Right.
And having to, it be a constant.
Yes, and this is our world, so we don't want to like be all like stressed out about it, but we need to understand that, you know, we need to like give other parts of us some airtime too, you know, or we just get so, you know, addicted to stimulation that we lose this whole ability to just be, and that's a big loss. So, yeah, but we're all doing this together. I mean, as a meditation teacher, I'm just constantly online, constantly emailing, constantly, you know, in all this. So we're all in this together. And, you know, we need to stop sometimes and throb with that kind of, I just want stimulation, you know, and relax and just keep relaxing and keep relaxing. And then we remember, oh, right, there's this whole other me that likes to be in my senses, that likes to be in my body, you know? And so we just need to make space for that, time for that. So when we do this, a lot of good things happen. When we take our refuge in the safe harbor of nowness, it's great because it is a safe harbor. And it also happens to just be what our life is. Our life always is nowness. So when we do this, it's a very effective way to de-stress your life. Remember, right, all stress is past and future. It might be being stimulated by a present experience, but our stress response involves past or future. So, Is there something stressful happening for you tomorrow? Like, let's say there was, but you've decided, because you're here, to come to class. How about just not going there right now? Let tomorrow's stress be tomorrow. A wise friend of mine, she talked about, even as like being in third grade, she had a little bit of Dharma wisdom in her. She said, I remember coming home with a bad report card, knowing her parents were going to be very upset. And she said to herself, not hurting now, on a walk home from school. That's the safe harbor of nowness. We can let the future be the future. And we instantly can relax. And it's very helpful. If you have something coming up that's going to be stressful, and you notice your mind going there, imagining it, right? It's not the real thing, because you don't know what's really going to happen. We have vague ideas, but that's almost all we have. Since we don't exactly know, you can just let go, but say to yourself, future thinking. That's a very helpful stress management tool. Just let the future be in the future. And yeah, of course, sometimes you have to plan. And, you know, but once you've done that, then you can let go. Every other time, it's like, okay, I know my plan. Just let go. And then when you're doing something like a Dharma class, or you're with a friend, or you're that, you've made the intention to be here in the now. So as soon as you're thinking of the stressful thing, you just say future thinking. And then when it actually happens, guess what? It won't be the future. It'll be now. So you really get to say future thinking, and you really get to let go. It's a very simple way. But it takes practice, because our habit is to we already know what we're going to do, but we're just thinking it over and over and over. And that's causing us a lot of stress, and it's not even happening. So that's our future orientation. Now there's our past orientation. So when our refuge is nowness, we're going to do this differently. But our normal way to do this is someone does something and it hurts our feelings. Maybe it scares us. Maybe it annoys us. But they did something once and we've replayed it 89 times. Where's our power? Is it in the person who did the thing once and taking care of that situation, or is it right here where we've done it 89 times? I think the answer is obvious. Our power is to, in the now, recognize, oh, this is about me. If they did it once, but I've replayed it 89 times, it isn't about them so much. It's about something important to me. It's maybe one of my needs. Maybe it's a boundary of mine that got crossed. It's about me. And so I need to take care of me. Because what we tend to do is we just think 89 times, that person is so blah, 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 insensitive, you know, thoughtless, you know, rude, mean, whatever. But that's not the real issue. Because other people, you know, we're all flawed, we're all careless, we're all, you know, make mistakes. But we don't know very much about other people. But we know about us, because it's happening here right now. We can let our refuge of nowness be, oh, this is what's happening right now. This is how I feel. Oh, my feelings are hurt. Wow. Might I be willing to admit that and just kind of like throb with that a little bit? That would be nowness. That would be my experience. That would be something I could know. I can't know what another person was up to. I might have even misinterpreted them in my hurt. So that's another way, that's sort of the past. The way to deal with the future stress is just that thought, future thinking. You know, the past stress is often it means getting in touch with something that maybe, just maybe, we don't quite want to feel. And so we relentlessly chew over, like, what a turkey that person is. And that's a defense. It's actually a defense against something inside we might not want to feel. But if we're willing to let ourselves feel it, then we're in the refuge of now. We're with what we can know. And it's empowering because we get in touch with something that's important to us. Does that make sense? And this is not to be, you know, like, dumb. We might want to, you know, later say something to that person, but we need to know our terrain first. To know how to respond, we have to know what our experience really is. And maybe we're hurt because actually they hit on a nerve where it's something we already feel bad about in ourselves. The whole idea that someone can't really hurt your feelings unless something in you agrees with them. Right? So it might not be easy, but it is empowering to actually rest in the truthful now of your experience, which can be vulnerable. So our refuge of nowness isn't always the easy one, but it's the one that's empowering. So we really deal with the stress in our lives much more effectively when we can just take refuge in our now experience. We can let go of the stressful events. You know, if we have a plan, we're done. We know what we might do. Then we can just let what's unknown be unknown, and we can say future thinking. We can let go of the past stressors by getting that what they're really doing is telling us something about ourselves that's happening right now. That's important. So I'm going to come back to that a little more, but there's another place where our refuge of now really is the safe harbor. That is when you're physically uncomfortable. So when you're dealing with physical discomfort, and people learn this, you know, through meditation, often, if we really watch our experience, the worst part is not the physical discomfort. The worst part are our thoughts about it. You know? So, I play soccer, I get injured, you know, and the injury itself, you know, various times has been mild, you know, but I've got this whole story about, wow, I've played soccer, I'm 55 since I was 12. This might mean the end of my soccer playing days. Now that, right, that's a lot of stress in my mind. Whereas the actual now experience is knee being mildly sore. The catastrophe is never in one of the five physical senses. The catastrophe is always in the sixth sense. Our thoughts about where this is going, what this means, etc. And we need to do that, you know. And if there's medical conditions, we've got to do all the medical stuff. Yet, our experience is still moment by moment by moment. So, we need to also just go into the safe harbor of non-catastrophe. It might be unpleasant. There might be soreness in a knee, but it isn't a catastrophe. Does that make sense? So we need to be willing to actually, you know, let go of all the Tabasco drama and just be in simple unpleasantness. And that, again, takes training. Easy to say, but hard to do. But our meditation practice will show us this. We learn this through meditation because we do get uncomfortable. And if we're willing to sometimes just sit with it, we learn, oh, I'm much more capable of sitting with unpleasantness than I believe. I can do this. So that's another area where this being here now is really helpful, is dealing with anything that's physically uncomfortable. You want to really recognize. Sometimes you could even do this. You could scale the physical discomfort on, you know, the classic 1 to 10 scale. So it, for me, with the soccer injury, you know, and it does mean actually, like, yeah, I stopped playing soccer, you know, this year in December. Yes, the sensation's mild soreness. And that was it's a 2. But it also means that, yeah, there's probably something going on with my meniscus. Is it meniscus? What's the thing that's cushioning the knee bones?
Yeah.
Yeah, a slight tear maybe. Okay. But on the, so that's a 2 on the 1 to 10 level of discomfort. But the thought, I'm 55, I'm probably never going to play soccer again, on the distress scale, it's maybe a 6 or 7. Yeah. It's like, because I'm going to be like, aw, I love soccer. I remember this. I remember that. I remember, you know, right? So it's to really notice the difference between the physical experience and your ideas about it. It's a way to really, like, get more peaceful about your experience. Okay. There's one more here. I'm noticing time, so I don't want to go too over. This is a big can of worms, but I'm not going to go there too much. Let's look at the label of this little can of worms. There's like a picture of worms, but we're not going to open it. Emotional pain is super, super helpful for your refuge to be in the now. When we're in emotional pain, we're depressed, we're sad, we're angry, we're grieving, there's such a tendency to take this emotion and project it forward and imagine your future as if this is how you're going to feel. So you're sad now, and then you picture yourself in that stressful situation tomorrow, and you're like, oh my God, I can't possibly do that meeting. Even though it's 24 hours away, as if sadness is going to just be continuous. You're not going to have any ups and downs in your mood between now and then, and you're going to be there just like you are now. It's not how we work. So, this is very important to see in our emotional world. We project whatever our current emotional state is forward and paint our, you know, our life movie with the emotion we're in right now. So when we watch ourselves do it, just let go of that. You don't know how you're going to be tomorrow in that meeting. You do know you're sad right now. So this sadness right now is what you need to be in. What's hard is that you have to allow the sadness. What's easy is you get to let go of the catastrophe and just notice sadness. How does it feel right now? Oh, you need to be in your body because that's nowness. Oh, there might even be wetness of tears. There might even be a little constriction in the throat. The heart center might be tight. Maybe the head's droopy. This is all something you can know while you're sad. And that very act of noticing sadness is like companionship. You're actually befriending your experience. And that happens in our refuge of nowness. we just say, oh, I don't know about tomorrow. I do know about now. This is how I am now. So the trick here, and some of you know this, but if you've never heard this, this is the little golden key that I think is really helps with emotions. What we have to do generally with our difficult stuff, our tough stuff, is accept it more and then believe it less. We need to accept that we're sad, but not believe all those scary thoughts about tomorrow. Accept it more, believe it less. That's true with sadness, with fear, with anger, with grief, all these difficult states. We need to allow these states, and that lets us be mindful. If we don't allow it, we can't notice what it's like. We need to allow it while not buying into all the thoughts, because we truly just don't know. That's the big can of worms. But that simple principle can be applied in any difficult state. And the key, though, is to stay grounded in the body experience, in the physical experience with a tough emotion. And if you do that, what's really interesting is that the emotion metabolizes itself. It actually burns its energy through and discharges, and then something else comes along. We didn't have to solve it or fix it or figure it out. It actually played itself out because we were just aware of sensation. So this is a real gem of our mindfulness practice. But it comes through this nowness orientation. We just take this refuge in, oh, sadness. Oh, right now, there's sadness. If we keep doing that and we don't bite too hard on the thoughts, it's energy that moves through. And then lo and behold, rather than being sad straight for 24 hours, we get tired, we get sleepy. Our sweetie gives us a little kiss on the cheek and we feel comforted, you know? So I think that's all I'll say there. So the more we orient to nowness, the more we take care of our life. The most practical skill you need in your life is how to be present. More important than paying bills, more important than having a good job, as important as that is, more important than getting your taxes in on time, the most practical need in our lives is knowing how to be in the present moment, because that's all your life ever is or ever will be. It's the only thing we know for sure. So we need to really practice nowness, awareness of now. And the little thing I like to say is, even if it's just like sitting with dumb old knee pain and you just feel like your meditation was distracted, but yeah, you came back to knee pain, you noticed it, but then you got distracted and you came back to knee pain, and you know, and then you got up and you were like, meditation, like, man, you did something very important. You worked with something unpleasant, and that's going to help you deal with any other unpleasantness. So I like to say taking care of this moment takes care of all moments. If you take care of this one now, and now, and now, you are taking care of your life. It's the most practical thing you can do, because we're so oriented out of the present into the past and future, we need to reorient again and again and again to this one right now. And then we take care of this one that helps us take care of the future ones when they happen. Because when they happen, they ain't going to be future. They're just going to be now. Okay, that's enough for me. please. Any responses? And then we'll do some sitting. Please.
You didn't confuse me.
I confused you.
Yes.
Good.
Description of
maybe.
Your time in canyon lands with all the bland walls.
Yes.
And so forth.
Yes.
And I know you're a photographer and you enjoy that kind of beauty.
Yes.
So please explain to me what I missed when you were...
Well, because the very beginning, I'm not talking about the middle or the end of retreat, but in the beginning... To stop all the stimulation. It's like, in a way, my mind is still reverberating from thinking, that's what I need. I need stimulation.
Okay.
So I was still in do. And, you know, when you get ready for retreat and you have to be out of contact for a week, there's so much to do. So it was just like, ugh.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, my friend Johan, you know, he talked to me. We did a little Dharma dialogue in the middle of the retreat, and he's saying, I'm just orienting to these canyons. They're not trying to do anything. They're just being. And I'm like, exactly. And like, that was such a little transmission. It's like, right. Everything here is just being, except me. I'm doing. So... instead of being bored by the canyons and the blue skies, just tune in. Tune into just being. You know, everything around me is just being. So it was just adjusting.
One of the things that I really like about the being with discomfort, whether it's emotional or physical, is I find that... I've been noticing this a lot lately. What I love is that you can feel impermanence in the body, like you were describing. It sort of plays its way out, whereas it's really hard to ever catch. And the impermanence in the mind is like there's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to, in some ways, track and really appreciate. There's no dissolving of
mm-hmm.
anything because it's just this tumbling. But like the body really arises and passes in a way that...
Right.
Can feel the pauses in between, which is really cool.
Right. So right, when we are actually really aware of our physical experience, the mind can be saying discomfort, right? But the discomfort can be changing, fluctuating, coming and going, and that's our experience. It's different than our thoughts. Yeah. One last one? Maybe someone who hasn't shared anything yet? Want to, like, stick out your neck a tiny bit? Question? Comments? Otherwise, we're going to have to meditate.
I like, this is a short thing, but Thich Nhat Hanh, The Miracle of Mindfulness, the breath is a bridge between the mind and the body. And I find when my mind wants to take off, especially talking to somebody that's triggering me somehow, just in their fit, like while they're literally talking to me and all this turbulence is happening, just coming to... The physical sensation of the breath really brings everything back to just kind of calm and able to just be in that moment. So it's hard, but it's very helpful to come back to the breath.
Great.
In all moments.
Yes, exactly. When we do this practice of just being with breath, you know, it's like learning how to swim. And then we get tossed off a boat, you know? That's a bad time to learn to swim, right? If we already know how to be with our breath and we're in some kind of, you know, conflictual situation and we can find our breath, that's gold, right? Because it helps you stay clear and calm, yet, you know, still dealing with the situation. So exactly. So, you know, this is practice. You know, what's it practice for? For life, for that. We're with our breath so we can take it into our life. Exactly. Okay. So we'll just end with, you know, a fair bit of 5 to 10 minutes of sitting and we'll end.